Welcome to Season 5, Episode 4 of RPG Circus, the greatest show in gaming. In this episode, we fire things up a little bit with the Version Wars. We do a little discussion about getting started in freelancing. And finally, we discuss a little bit about these cyberpunk type games. Again, welcome to Season 5, Episode 4 of RPG Circus. My name, of course, is Jeff, and joining me this week is Brian from StufferShack.com. And finally, George is finally back in the house with us. Welcome back.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Yeah, well, you finally finished your move and got your internet all straightened up, so that's fantastic.
That's true. I almost have room for all my RPG books now. It's amazing.
Say it isn't so.
It is so.
Blasphemy.
I have it on full-on PDF. I need physical space.
Well, that's good. So this place is bigger than your last one?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, pretty much double. But that's what happens when you move out of the downtown.
Yes.
Yes.
That is what happens. Anything else we need to discuss before we get into the news?
News.
All right. News item one. this will be fun. Is first, Games Workshop says that their sales and profits are up, and we're up in 2012. And it's kind of interesting because they had some small changes that they had to do with the way they did things, and I find that just kind of interesting because, well, the next news item kind of is another fun one, mm-hmm. where Games Workshop, most people probably heard about this one. They claim that they own the term Space Marines in science fiction books.
Now, this is a tough one because I feel like this was happening when we recorded our last one, and we just didn't get to it. But
it kind of.
Oh my God! What?
And the worst part about it was. The one book that got taken off of Amazon, because that they sent basically a letter to Amazon, and so mm-hmm. Amazon kind of just said, okay, sure. And the problem is that I guess Games Workshop has expanded into novel media.
Mm-hmm. They have.
And the problem gets to be is that in the gaming world, they technically do own the copyrights to the word Space Marine. Which to me is still kind of farcical in itself.
I think we need to be careful here because if my understanding is correct, and I am not a lawyer, and I am not offering anyone legal advice, they claim a trademark over the word Space Marine, which is
different than copyright. You're absolutely correct, sir.
But it actually makes their argument weaker. Like if they had a copyright, that would be like they might actually get away with this nonsense. But
trademarks are a little weird and just like, for example, in the United States, one of the big ones is most people call it Kleenex, not facial tissue, even though technically Kleenex is a trademark name mm-hmm. rather than it's just like Band-Aids. Band-Aids yep. is a trademark name, not the actual product.
It's not a product. It's an adhesive bandage, sir.
Exactly.
Yep.
And the danger is that trademarks, if you don't try to protect your trademark, then technically you can lose it because it becomes common usage for a generic yep. product.
It'll be, what do they call it? I can't think of the phrase. There's a specific phrase right now for when your trademark lessens because it's being used so much. So if you don't fight it, it basically goes away. Now, to Amazon's credit, they put the book back. They took it down because there was a complaint. They reviewed the complaint. They put the book back. But there was a very scared, self-publishing author for a little while there who really did not know whether or not that their book that they had spent obviously a fair amount of time on would ever see the light of day. Because suing Games Workshop is difficult.
Right. And actually, the EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, actually mm-hmm. Helped out in that regard.
Good.
That's why they're the ones that actually apparently dealt with Amazon about this because they thought it was ridiculous as well.
Well, yeah, because it's a little ridiculous. I mean, I don't think I saw a single comment on the interwebs relating to this where they were like, oh, come on, guys. Of course Games Workshop should be able to control the phrase Space Marine because that's reasonable.
Well, of course, most people were pointing out that, well, the term Space Marine, especially in science fiction, has been around for a long, long time.
You know what? If Great-Grandpa Joe, right, can trace things back to himself, to first publishing the phrase Space Marine, I don't even care. I really don't. Because the concept of a Space Marine should not be trademarkable or copyrightable because it's just a marine in space. This is not a unique idea at all.
Adjective and a noun, the end.
Yeah, it's like, what? So, yeah, so glad that didn't work out for Games Workshop. Yeah.
But I mean, this does get into the area where, for example, I mean, like WotC, almost all the monsters now have really very specific names. It's not just a goblin, it's a specific type of goblin.
Yeah, but to WotC's credit, they've been pretty good about IP versus open gaming material.
I'm just saying, but this is kind of the trend, and that's not just, I mean, granted, I agree, they haven't really been like, we're going to sue you over that name, no. But I'm just saying, yes, it is IP versus other.
Yep.
That's where...
There are things that WotC wants to protect. You know, they don't want you to make a game with Mind Flayers and Beholders. But if you take a look at Dungeon World, you will find the Tarrasque and the Aboleth. And that's also part of the D20 open game license. And these are things that they could possibly take credit for if they wanted to. But, you know, you've got to draw the line somewhere.
No. And I understand that. But I'm just saying that, you know, again, for IP protection, a lot of companies are kind of doing that kind of thing.
Sure. You want to protect your property, but, you know, I'm not disagreeing with you at all. Absolutely.
Yeah. So,
got to be reasonable, though.
This was just kind of like one of those ones that really you're like, really?
Yeah.
And a lot of people were like, well, you know, I really started really hating Games Workshop, and this kind of put my nail in the coffin. it's kind of the impression that we got out of that one. So
there was a lot of people suddenly changing their name to Space Marine something on Twitter. Yeah.
They better hope somebody doesn't go after Terminator. They'll have to change the whole Space Marine line. Right?
Who knows?
It's just a slight sidetrack. So the game that I'm working on that I hope to have out next month is called Pulp the RPG. That's the core game mechanic. That's what I'm calling it. And, of course, you know, pulp is... not a new word. I did not make up this phrase, pulp. And this will not be the first RPG ever out there based around pulp-like concepts that uses the word pulp in describing it. But a friend of mine had asked me at one point if I copyrighted the name. And I said, no, that's ridiculous. And then I went to the copyright database, and somebody has, in fact, trademarked the word pulp as well as the phrase vintage pulp. And you can get away with that. Because trademark is something very specific, and it depends, you know, like they trademark pulp in a very specific, like, font type, you know, in use within a specific area.
Oh, trust me, you can get away with it in certain IP, you can get away with it in copyrights patents.
You can't just say, like, that guy that owns pulp, the trademark, is never going to sue me. Because I don't do what he does, and I'm not using pulp in his fonts, and I'm not, you know, in any way weakening his claim on the phrase pulp, because he chose to use the word pulp, which has been around for a long time and used in many different ways. All right, I'm done. I'm sorry. It's just ridiculous.
It is.
You know, of course I'm not going to trademark pulp or try to protect my copyright on the idea of pulp. Space Marine. All right.
All righty. On to more interesting things, which is a few Kickstarters.
Kickstarters, yeah.
And the first one up is, let's go with Actong, the Cthulhu, which is, it's interesting because it actually, they hit their stretch goal, which is cool, because it was originally just going to be a Call of Cthulhu, and they were hoping that if they hit their stretch goal, they would make the compatibility with the Savage Worlds Realms of Cthulhu, which mm-hmm. they did. They actually hit their stretch goal, which was, what was it, 11,000 pounds, because it's British. So the good news is that it's out there, and it's kind of a World War II Cthulhu game, which is interesting because I've actually played quite a few games that are set in World War II without actually having source books for it to be War II.
Actun Cthulhu is a game that already exists, isn't it? This is for some sort of add-on product?
I thought it did, but...
I think Actun Cthulhu existed last year at Gen Con. Wasn't it nominated for something?
No, I think there was something else. Might be wrong.
Oh, okay.
This might be a newer edition of that same product. Who knows?
Maybe.
The reading of it through it didn't lead me to think that it was specifically anything, you know, an older product, but I could be wrong.
I mean, maybe it was just making the rounds. That does happen at Gen Con. Games that don't exist yet exist at Gen Con.
The good news
but I really thought it had been published for some reason.
Well, the good news is it has 41 days to go, and it's already up to 19,541 pounds.
That's great.
And it only wanted 8,000. So,
mm-hmm.
And for someone like me, which is this would make a great addition to my Weird Wars 2 books that I have for Savage Worlds.
Sure. Yeah, it would fit with that nicely. Cool.
Yeah, at least I think so, because it's like, well, you know, I could be playing this, but I could use the Weird Wars 2 stuff as kind of some filler and some additional information, I suppose. So,
I'm telling you, I know this is slightly tangential, but that Realms of Cthulhu book for Savage Worlds I think is awesome, partly because it has one of the best random adventure generators for GMs to use toward the back of the book. One of the best random generators I've ever seen, because you can just so easily throw the necessary components together and come up with the basics of a story and let your players help you fill in the rest. It's just a nice little supplement.
Well, that's kind of, I don't actually have that one. I have his Agents of Oblivion, but I don't have the Realms of Cthulhu. Yeah.
I like Agents of Oblivion, but I think the Realms one is just awesome. And they've got these cool pre-made bennies you can buy for it. I'm sure they're out there on eBay somewhere with little, you know, they're poker chips, but with nice little Cthulhu dudes on it. Spooky.
Who doesn't like Cthulhu dudes?
Yeah.
The next one up that we have is Realmswork. Realmswork. God, I almost couldn't say that one. And this one still has 4 days to go, but it's a little bit shy. It wanted $100,000, and it's at 94 and almost 95,000. And this is some campaign management related stuff, which is kind of it's a software package is what it is. And what's interesting is that I guess the guys at the Gnome Stew have actually seen this, and they're actually they've been pushing this rather heavily. I'm not sure if it would be for me. I think while it's cool, I do like the little some of the flow charts and some of the visualization tools. Wow, I can't speak today. It's kind of cool. But again, I think, you know, I'm not running that very heavy. Usually I'm not running that very complex game, so I'm not sure if I would ever use this. It is kind of cool, though. And I think what is the minimum buy-in? Looks like $35 to get an actual copy of the software, which that's actually not too bad. You know, that's about what I would expect to pay for, you know, some sort of software tool in this regard. But like I said, it has some interesting features. I just don't know if it would be for me.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's weird because I've always wanted to always have all my notes on in a computer in a format that's actually somewhat usable for me. And I've really never figured out a good way to do that. This would be something that would be fun to play with as a trial to see, but I don't know if I'd want to back it just and then it didn't work for me.
Well, it's interesting because just looking at it quickly, it looks like it does a lot of stuff that existing software does, but it sort of packages it all together, which is nice. I think what's especially interesting is that they're asking for $100,000, which is not that strange for a piece of software.
No.
But they have an expected delivery date of July. That seems really soon.
Yeah. I've gotten the impression that most of it is done.
Do you know why they need $100,000 then?
No.
Okay. Just curious. Yeah.
I'm not really sure, to be honest with you.
Sure. I mean, I haven't been following this one. This is the first I heard of it. Software usually takes a little while, has high prices needed, you know, high goals needed, but takes a little while.
Well, I mean,
this is
the guys that did this is the guys that produced Hero Lab.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And
sure.
Army Builder, so, Lone Wolf Development. So mm-hmm. It's not like it's an unknown company.
Sure.
And I guess
they've probably been working on it for a while.
And I guess what this is actually some sort of client server product.
Okay.
So I guess the reason they need the money, I guess, is for their servers.
Okay, sure. That's expensive. Yeah.
So.
Okay. Yeah, I'll buy that.
No, I mean, that's what it boils down to, because this is, I guess, you get the software, you get the client, and I guess, because one of the cheaper levels is a copy of, like, just player access. So I guess mm-hmm. even if you're a player, you have to have a player account to access sure. the information. So I'm not really, that's a little weird, but, you know, hey, we you know, people pay for Obsidian Portal and other products, so.
I do.
You know, and I say, what, you know, if you use a product, pay for it.
Yep.
So, like I said, it looks kind of cool, but I just don't know if it would be for me. They have, like I said, they're at 95,000. They have 4 days to go.
Yeah, they'll probably push over the edge.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's not usually, I have a bad feeling about things that don't. I mean, it has 4 days, so.
Mm-hmm. And the last 2 days in a Kickstarter is almost, you know, usually as successful as the first, so.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never experienced that.
Yeah.
So there's that. The next one up, of course, I'm kind of, it's just kind of interesting from a, considering the topic that I chose, or not chose, or what I've been doing gaming-wise. I've been doing old Gamma World.
I mean, oh, yeah?
This obviously is not old Gamma World, but it's a Kickstarter for Broken Earth, a post-apocalyptic RPG adventure. And I guess it's basically based on the Pathfinder RPG.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool. I always like post-apocalyptic settings because everyone always has their own little take on what a post, you know, what a post-apocalyptic will look like.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, I mean, it's pretty close to be funded now. And he's only asking like $3,500 and he has almost 3,000.
Yep.
He still has a couple of weeks to go.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only, I mean, honestly, for that 3,000, he only has 106 backers. So.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about Kickstarter. If, like, you have a really small goal, you know, you don't really need that many people to buy.
No, you really don't. A lot of very successful, I shouldn't say a lot of very successful, but you can do a lot with between $2,000 and $5,000 to make an RPG supplement. I mean, that's really the cost you see on the tabletop books, and then after that, it's gravy.
Right, but I mean, yeah. this is why we see, you know, Kickstarter taking off more for even regular companies are starting to do Kickstarters to
sure
even bother doing a product at all. So. Because, you know, that's like, okay, well, if no one's interested in it, we haven't wasted our money, and we haven't taken anybody's money yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the last one is one that is kind of interesting. Actually, I'm not going to mention it because he has like no backers, which is sad.
No,
he has 13 backers. The Procurator. It has only like 2 days left to go.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted an absurd amount, but he wanted to create a website tool to create and manage character sheets, which I can kind of understand because I've always wanted to make my own character sheets, and they're really the tools to do that kind of suck.
Yeah. So it's not to make specific character sheets for like a specific game, but like some sort of way you can rearrange elements to make your own character
Correct.
Sheets? Oh, okay.
You know, and it was going to be web-based.
Sure.
And I mean, he had some good ideas, but I just realized that, you know, he actually, with only 37 hours to go, he only has $710 out of, well, first off, he wanted $30,000.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah. Now, that said, probably a lot of that is server-side work.
Yeah. I mean, software, anything that's software-based is generally going to... We just had this conversation. Yep.
Yeah. Trust me. Yep. I'm familiar.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, you could check it out to see what he was thinking about, and who knows, maybe he might do something in smaller scale. Good news is that we did have one request to cover something, which is the 1D4Con.
Yeah.
Which is in Winchester, Virginia on April 26th through the 28th. And it looks like it's a brand new convention that James is setting up. And it's going to be $20 for all 3 days and then $25 at the door. So that's kind of that's really kind of cool. And we're going to include a link in the show notes to the con website. You know, I'm always interested in why, you know, how people start conventions and why they start them. I mean, mm-hmm. obviously they start because, like, there's nothing there.
Sure.
But it's always interesting just to, because, you know, the first convention is always going to be small.
Yep.
You know, I don't know, you know, it's like, because I've been to a few here and where I live in Phoenix, and it's like, there was one here for a couple of years called Random Con.
Yeah.
It lasted for, like, I think 3 years, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I think maybe I think they were lucky if they had, like, 100 people.
Sure.
So.
Well, you know what? I'm thinking of going to this one. That's close to my old stomping grounds.
You should do it. And he's a fan of the show.
I've never been to a convention. I'm a total convention virgin.
What?
I know. I could get all liquor and it could happen.
You know?
And you know, prepay $20. That ain't bad.
That's not bad.
It's. Yeah. I know. I'm gonna go. He says,
if you run games for
three plus games, you get $10 back. Off.
Yep.
So that ain't bad either.
I saw that. And not only did I see that, I have one small complaint for this right now. It's tiny, and it's more amusing than a real complaint. But I was looking at the RPG game list for this convention.
Yeah.
And there's a write-up for Rollmaster, which Jeff and I both know pretty well. And I know you know of it, Brian. But the write-up for the Rollmaster game says that Rollmaster is a consistent and intuitive system.
Oh, no.
And I love that. It's neither. But I love Rollmaster, but I wouldn't call it consistent or intuitive.
Well, you know what you need to do. You need to go to the con, volunteer to run it, and you just weasel your way into rewriting the description for next year.
Yeah, I will.
You can be the Rollmaster guy.
I think playing Rollmaster, running Rollmaster at a convention is the closest thing to hell I can imagine. Seriously, it takes. I mean, how many hours does it take to make? I guess you have to come with your characters prepared. But
the game master has to have free gems. Yeah, there's just no way.
But in Rollmaster, that's forever.
Exactly. So, and one item last to note before we get to the meat of the show, because we're just killing ourselves with the news, is our guest host last week, Caitlin, her mm-hmm. Conquering Corsairs. This is the Kickstarter that she was doing, right? Or is,
mm-hmm.
yeah, okay, just making sure I got that right. Is nearing 5,000.
That's right. 17 days left to go, and they're only looking for 7,500. So I just thought people might want a little update since we talked about that last time.
Yeah, that ain't bad, you know, really. Yeah.
They're moving right along.
I think they'll hit that.
Yeah, I think so too. Pirate card game, George. It's a pirate card game.
Cool.
Yeah.
And as the bad pun says, R the pirate's favorite letter?
Yeah, that's... That wasn't even delivered well.
I know, but that's why it's a bad pun, and it's my bad pun.
All right, topics. What do we got? What do you got, Jeff?
Well, first up, let's have George have the mic because, well, he hasn't been here in, like, forever.
Sure.
I wanted to do a little talk about version wars and not the game versions that people think.
Yeah, you know, as you might know from hearing me ramble in the past, I like to try out different games, and D&D has never quite hit the sweet spot for me. I mean, I've always had fun when I played it, but it never hit me just right. So I'm always looking and trying new games. especially fantasy games. They just are my favorite. But the more research I do into trying different games recently, and this is a rant, by the way, the more pissed off I'm getting at some of the version wars or just simple evolution of game versions that I keep running into. And you know what? When I was thinking about it earlier today, I thought that when you consider how there are games developed that then, you know, get bought by someone else or taken, or there's a new version or a slightly different version. I don't think there's any system besides RPGs that has as confusing so many versions, except for like translations of ancient foreign epics, you know, individually translated by different professors from different eras in literary history. Because I'm telling you, there are just so many overlapping things. A Rolemaster came to mind earlier, which is why I looked it up and saw the funny thing about how intuitive it is, where if you decided that you wanted to go back and learn old school Rolemaster, there's actually a web page on the Iron Crown Enterprises forums dedicated to explaining the different versions and how you could begin to collect them all and potentially avoid overlap. And I read that, and I still screwed up at one point, you know, standard Rolemaster standard books, because it had the different colored border on the cover of the page.
The RMSS was horrible.
Yeah, or like, you know, I've always been kind of interested in RuneQuest, but never really played it. And there was RuneQuest, and then a slightly different version of RuneQuest, and recently a game called Legend, but another also called Legend came out, and don't get the wrong one. And now they're making a new version of RuneQuest called RuneQuest 6, even though Legend just came out like a year and a half ago, and it's built on the RuneQuest system. And long story short, I feel like we are getting to the point where so much is required for some of these versions that it's ridiculous. I wish they would just change the names for some of them and go with a new direction.
You know. This happened also with Gamworld, which I'm actually playing the second edition, as I told you.
Right.
And yeah, you're right. You know, it's interesting that, you know, first edition, second edition Gamworld, fairly close. Third edition Gamworld, Marvel superheroes had come out at the time, so all of a sudden, well, all the actions need to be resolved on like the Marvel superhero type table. Version 4 comes out, and version 4 is more like version 2 and 1, except now it has classes, which is kind of weird. And, you know, the latest version, that the one that's based on D&D 4th edition, is technically edition 7.
Sure.
And I've never, you know, I think when AD&D 2nd edition came out, they had the science fiction alternative rules. And they had a version of Gamworld that actually was based off of the eternity rules. And it's just like, oh, really? Okay, wow. How many versions of Gamworld do I really need? you're right. It's very interesting. It's like, well, how do I pick a, you know, if I say Gamworld, what game am I playing?
Right.
So, and I mean, and then of course there's always the problem of, okay, this was a really great adventure, but now, unless they make a new version, I got to hand convert it. Which sometimes, strangely enough, sometimes is easy, sometimes is not so easy.
Right.
So.
Well, you know, in some cases, I just wonder how, I don't know, maybe this is the wrong way to put it, but how necessary they were. I mean, I've got Legend, which is that recent redoing of RuneQuest.
How
necessary is RuneQuest 6 when Legend, the remake of it, came out, you know, weeks before? I mean, there must have been some amazing discovery between the two for it to be worthwhile.
I guess my question is, does it still use the basic Chaosium system, the basic role-playing system, whatever the hell they call it?
You mean RuneQuest?
Yeah.
Oh, well, it's still, they both use, a percentile for combat, and then they have that sort of, like, for character development, they've got the different stages of, like your personal growth, and then it's sort of class-based by, like, your career.
Huh. No, I see. See, I played the old Avalon Hill version of RuneQuest. Wow, man, I'm just spacing it. So, yeah,
that's interesting. It just seems all. I don't know. I don't know why I'm really bitching about it. You know, except that with certain systems like D&D, it doesn't bug me because I feel like there aren't as many, and it's so clear. You know, I mean, I think 4 is so clearly different from 3, 5.
Oh, yeah. I mean, after AD&D, you're absolutely right. Now, right. Before AD&D, dear God, good luck in that mess.
Yeah.
I was just listening to a podcast the other day that was wasn't supposed to be about D&D. It was supposed to be about the OSR, you know, the old school renaissance.
Sure.
And they were talking to guys who had published OSR games, and they started talking about what the heck is OD&D, because it's different things to different people. Because there was a period where, you know, it wasn't really being published properly. And they had all these boxes that came before D&D, and you may not even have been introduced to a full box. You may have just been introduced to one of the pamphlets from one of the boxes.
Oh, which actually should bring us up to an interesting point that didn't hit the news, and it should have, is that...
They are reprinting the white box.
Yes.
Yes.
For no good reason outside of money.
Well, it's a nostalgia. It's super nostalgia. Because they've got the Moldev.
Yes, I know, but
the red
still.
Box. The red boxes, you can get the red box PDF for $5. So obviously, if you want to play OD&D, you can buy it for $5. They're not going to make a fortune off of you. This is purely nostalgia. It's like $130.
You know, I'm sorry.
It includes early settings.
$100? Wrong. They actually, on their website, they listed it at $150.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I said, what did I say?
Everyone, that's the weird thing. I saw it for 100, but the list price that I've seen it for is 150 off their website.
Oh, okay.
Or maybe 149.
I'm forgetting it wrong.
Or maybe that's a special set, because the set I saw had a box.
This is a box set. I don't think they're doing it elsewise. It's a box set. Yeah. It's got the three original pamphlets. It's got some settings, some old setting pamphlets, and it's got a dice.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. The line from Spaceballs comes to mind. about the sequel. For Spaceballs 2 is the sequel, The Search for More Money.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, but that just comes to mind.
Well, they're not publishing anything right now. Yeah, I mean, we're getting off topic.
Yeah, but. I know. But you're right. It's interesting. You know, the original, everything prior to AD&D or even AD&D itself was very confusing. Very, you know, I know a lot of people that. You know, let's face it, the classic module, you know, Keep on the Borderlands, B2,
yep.
That was, what, used by just about everyone I can think of, even in AD&D. It's like they played Keep on the Borderlands with AD&D.
Yep.
Yeah.
Even though there were some strange differences.
I mean, I'm running a 4E campaign right now with a Pathfinder product, and you know, with a Pathfinder adventure. And obviously, I'm converting stuff, because you just can't do it straight up. But they're still so they're definitely sister systems that there are some things that I don't bother looking up. I'm just like, you guys are second level. I'm just going to give you the XP, and I know it's going to be comparable. So I give them the Pathfinder XP for the 4E fight.
Right.
Well, yeah. Because I know it's close enough.
But I think I do think what George is talking about is more along the. Almost what I'm going to call game system identity crisis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because Traveler probably has had that the worst.
I was going to mention that, but I don't even know where to start.
Well, you know, because, I mean, when you with Traveler, you have the original rules, the classic little black books, which even within the little black books, it's a little confusing. Because, you know, as you go through the first three books, coherent, fine. You get to book 4, you know, Mercenary, it adds some stuff. You get to book 5, Highgarden, and it adds stuff. And it's like you get some new skills that other characters don't have. Or the gun combat skill in Mercenary works differently than the gun combat skill in Highgarden. And you're like, why? But, you know, you have those type of things. And then, you know, you went in, you know, they made Mega Traveler, which was similar but not quite, to try to unify things. And in many ways, it's probably a little more unified than others. And then, of course, you have, you know, they went into Traveler the New Era, which used their house rules, which was completely confusing. And then there was, no, wait a minute, Traveler the New Era?
Well.
Yeah, that's it. And then, of course, you know, once you get down the line to Mongoose Traveler, they've kind of gone back to the originals, but not quite. So, yeah.
I have, like, great respect, but also anger toward Call of Cthulhu, because I know there's 6 editions. But each edition, you know, changes by all of about 3 sentences. Honestly, there's hardly any. The game is pretty well made. It doesn't really need a great change. Yet there are six editions. You know, mm-hmm. I know. Those are more or less just reprints with a few corrections and a few other ideas put in.
Pretty much. But
what's cool about that, though, is you could buy fourth, or you could buy the current one, or the really expensive leather-bound Super Anniversary one, and interchangeable. Nothing really to worry about it, unless you're some kind of purist, you know. Which sometimes I am. There's nothing against that. But I don't know. Some of the overlap and redundancy just seems like almost crazy if you were trying to get into something from the outside. Like, I don't know, honestly. I would have to talk to you, Jeff, and then spend hours reading online to figure out where to break into Traveler at this point. Or just find some local dude who's playing it. I guess that's a way to start. But
yeah, honestly, it would probably either be buy the Little Black Book reprints or do the Mongoose version.
Yeah.
Because for the most part, those are the only two versions that anyone's playing.
Yeah. And I had a side topic that I wanted to add to this real quick, and that's that, you know, this is a different kind of version I wanted to mention, but I'm not happy in some ways when some of these role-playing games that I love open the possibility of the MMORP version or any other video game version of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really enjoy Pathfinder, but I don't really want there to be a Pathfinder online game. You know,
no, I mean, you don't want it. You just don't even want it to exist. It's not that you don't want to play it. You don't want it to exist.
Right. I'm a fascist about the MMO, about the video game. I don't know. I guess I feel like it's going to tie it to the game I play and make it feel lame. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know, George. I think you might be crazy.
I could be.
You know, he is a little crazy, but I know what he's talking about because, again, this goes back to what we were talking about earlier about trademarks, where, mm-hmm. you know, there's a product, in, you know, obviously there's a brand. Pathfinder, no matter which, is a brand.
Sure.
Yep. And the question is that, you know, if you say Pathfinder, you know, if for some reason the video game is more popular than the pencil and paper RPG, people might not even know that there is a pencil and paper RPG.
I'm okay with that. You know what I mean? Because think about this, right? I can't say this anymore because I know the numbers have changed so much in the last 6 months. But if we were talking a year ago, you know, what's the third biggest system right now actively being published? And it's the Age system. You know, after D&D and Pathfinder, it was Age. And most people, if you were to poll, you know, the population of the United States and say Dragon Age to them, they're going to go to video game, and they probably don't even know this exists. But the Age system only exists because of the Dragon Age game, spawned things that had nothing to do with it, and ended up being one of the biggest tabletop game systems that was actively being published. And it's a great little system. It really is. But it's you know, it's tied to the video game in some ways, and it's grown out beyond that. And I don't care that most people know the video game because it spawned something great for our community.
And, you know, I respect that. And I also realize that there's a kind of hypocrisy to what I'm saying because, you know, like there's other Pathfinder products that I don't care about and I'm not going to buy. But for some reason, having this sort of like, I don't know, World of Warcraft feeling to it, I'm not happy. I don't want there to be a documentary about Pathfinder years from now about sad people who play too much.
Oh, come on.
Because I don't want to be on TV like that, guys.
Well, you know, in about 20, 30 years, it'll be, you know, they'll be doing the documentary about the old folks home where there are people that are still playing D&D.
That's right.
That's what I'm thinking. So, all right. Well,
my rant is over, and it's not even a thoughtful rant necessarily, but it's something I noticed mostly when I looked at RuneQuest, and I was like, seriously, like you just did this to me. Now you're switching again. It's like dating in high school. It's just too much trouble.
I love it. So next up, we have what do we have? We have we had a request for this topic, which was about freelancing. So mm-hmm. take it away, because you're probably the only one among us that can even really speak to this.
Totally true.
Yeah, I can speak to this a little bit. So this was a comment on our Facebook page. Jeffrey Bowles, and I hope I'm saying your name right, sir. Otherwise, sorry. Hit us up on the Facebook page, and he asked, is there a way you guys could do a show on how to get involved in the RPG industry in a professional manner, like writing modules or designing RPG game features, how, where to submit work, that kind of thing? And this is a topic that we could talk about for a really long time. In fact, there have been panels at conventions, and I'm sure you can find recorded versions of it. So I'm going to give the Cliff Notes version here, especially since I'm not an expert by any means. I'm somebody who's done it, who's talked to a lot of people who have done it. So I can definitely talk about it, but there's a lot of material out there on this. And I would say pretty much consistently across the board, the number one thing that everyone recommends that worked for me is to not wait, is to start writing now. And the best way to get your material out there right now is through a blog. There's two ways you can do that. You can just start up your own WordPress or Blogger site and start blogging, or you can find a website that takes open contributions and blog with other people. And I've talked about this a little bit in the past. I absolutely recommend the latter. It's really difficult to keep up your own blog on a topic like gaming where you're constantly writing material, even if you're only posting 1 to 3 times a week. Because the most important thing you can do is be somewhat consistent. And if you start missing days, it feels like you will never catch up.
Yeah, well, you know what, Anna, I can agree with that.
Yep, I know you've had experience there, Jeff. Yeah, and it also can be depressing when you think no one's reading your blog. And any new blog is going to have zero readers.
Yeah, but here's an interesting point, though, is you're absolutely right probably about the blog entry. Because several of the people that were blogging, 5 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them right now are, that were successful at blogging have gone in to do some freelance work.
I can name a lot of people who I know started blogging within the last 6 years.
Right.
And are, freelancing on a professional level. And by professional level, I mean they get paid by relatively well-known companies to freelance. I don't mean they do it for a living, because people who are award-winning game designers don't do it for a living because there's no money. But,
But, and so,
it gives you a place to get noticed. It gives you a place to practice your writing. Right. And even if nobody ever reads your blog, once you start submitting stuff to people, it gives them a place, they can Google you and they can look at something that you've done.
Yeah.
So useful. It's a portfolio and it's a place to practice.
Yeah. Well, and honestly, that's why, RPG, Paizo's RPG Superstar program exists, because they do that. And then I don't know if they do it anymore, but Paizo also used to have a program for their, their organized play.
Yep. Both Paizo and Watsi still has organized play organizations.
Right.
And
I forget what it is.
Can get freelance work writing for them. Absolutely.
Well, I'm just saying you can get in, you can produce, because they actually have open calls for those type of things. And it's a way, it's a way to at least try.
Yep. So, and which brings, that touches upon two of the other things I wanted to talk about, which is once you start writing, there are other places to get noticed. And I would say start writing first, because it's hard. About blogs, if you want to start writing for a blog that takes other people's submissions, so you can get one, immediate feedback and immediate audience and less pressure to keep up. I put a link in our show notes here for the Gamer Assembly resources page, which hasn't been updated recently, but it's still a pretty good list, and I don't know of a better one. And one of the lists on the resources page is a list of blogs that accept outside submissions.
Well, that's cool.
Places where you can start doing like once a month or once every other week, which is super helpful. Very helped me. The Suffershack.com helped me get freelancing work. It absolutely did. But beyond that, there's contests. You mentioned RPG Superstar. Cobalt Press does contests like Valhalla Rising, which ended just about a month ago. They do the Tin Crown contests once a year. Lots of publishers do contests. WotC does contests every so often. You know, I got my name on the Wizards of the Coast website because I was in one of their contests. You know, I designed a creature that never led directly to publishing work, but people saw my stuff, which was great.
Right, you're right, because at least being, you know, freelance work, just like being any type of artist, you have to have a portfolio that you can show people.
Yep, and you know, when I talk to people at Wizards of the Coast at Gen Con, and I mentioned my name, they say, okay, that sounds familiar. And I said, well, you judged my piece in this contest. And they could say, oh, yes, I remember that. That was a really cool idea. I wish we could have done this, this, or that with it. You know, it's a way to dialogue. People do still recommend conventions for dialoguing with publishers. Just be careful. You know what I mean? You don't want to take up a lot of somebody's time. You want to be polite. I would say write first. The world is a lot flatter now due to the internet. And there's lots of places to take open submissions. That same resources page has a listing of publishers, which again is a little out of date, but it's a great starting place. And we tag companies that pay freelancers, and we tag companies that take open submissions. I got my first piece of published work on paper in Kobold Quarterly Magazine, which just did open calls for submissions. Now, they don't exist anymore, but Gygax Magazine does. Pelgrane Press does their own zine. Gygax Magazine isn't taking open submissions yet, but they say they are going to. So that's a great outlet for working with a professional editor for the first time, getting your name next to other people's names. You know, the first issue of Kobold Quarterly I was in, if you look at the front cover, it doesn't mean much, but I was still super excited about this as a new published, new freelancer. The name of my article on the front cover was bigger than Monty Cook's article, and I just got the biggest kick out of that.
That's all.
Because it didn't matter who I was at the moment. They liked this idea, and they were pushing it to sell their magazine. I will say one last thing. It's easier and easier these days to self-publish, and you can start that way. I would absolutely recommend blogging first. Blog, 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 just for the practice writing, to see what people think about your ideas, to get feedback and develop. But if you have a really good idea, you can put it out there, but you've got to do a lot of self-promotion work yourself, which is hard. If you've got a good idea, I would recommend releasing it for free first. People don't know who you are. Releasing it for free, get your name out there. You can always put together a better version later and sell it. You know, that's why Dungeon World exists, and they're doing awfully well at this point. And they're certainly not the first people to do that. Dungeon World is an Apocalypse World hack. They didn't have to pay to use the license. They released it. People played it. They refined it. Then they sold it. I said a lot of stuff. But that's you can do it. It's not as hard as it used to be. It's not as hard as it looks. I'm doing pretty well. I have a day job, obviously, but I'm doing all right, and I've only been at this for a few years.
Yeah, well, I think the one takeaway that everyone should note is, just like they always told me in any book that I've ever read on doing computer consulting, don't quit your day job.
Yeah. Oh, no. And I'm not kidding when I say people who are award-winning game designers have day jobs. I don't want to call anybody out right now, but look around and you will see that it's true. So many of these people who have their names on the front of these books work a completely different day job. A lot of them are in the IT fields, oddly enough. You go to a game convention, you can talk IT all day long.
No, that's not a stereotype. It's the truth.
It's the truth. It's the truth. If you look at my LinkedIn profile, you will see that I'm friends with a lot of game people these days, and they all have IT credits. They all have IT credits. It's crazy. But write, go to blogs, do contests, get your name out there. There are a lot of people who are willing to help you, and you just have to talk to them and be nice. You know, Daniel Solis runs a meetup through Google Hangouts for freelancers every weekday at 10 a.m., and there's always an open call for help during one of those too. It's a great way to talk to people and find out what they're doing. And people on Twitter are very friendly. And you can talk to almost anybody. They don't care that you've never been published before. They're willing to give you advice. I think before I close out, the one last thing I would push is the Kobold Guide to Game Design, which is a relatively cheap book. You can get it on your Kindle or as a PDF. And it talks about a lot of stuff that's useful for game designers as well as GMs. But there is a whole section on publishing and getting published as a freelancer in that book. And I still reference that book when I'm putting together pitches and adventure material.
All righty.
It's great. Yep.
There you go. All righty. Well, I think I'll keep my item short, which was kind of a short item anyway. One of our listeners actually sent us a little message. Chris, I don't even know how to pronounce his last name. It looks like Constantin or Constant. It's not Constantine because he didn't put an E on it.
Constantin?
Okay.
Do you have it written somewhere?
Yeah, I emailed you guys a while back. Anyway, it's not that important. Chris, okay. I'm sorry I mispronounced your last name. That's okay. I mispronounce my own name all the time. I'm serious. But a while back, I had written an article about cyberpunk games, in case anyone's wondering. If you look at the RPG Circus, I blog it roughly once a week. Kind of took the last few weeks off or so. But one of the things that I noticed is that, you know, I've always liked cyberpunk games, but it seems like it's almost like they're kind of in. It was kind of weird reading them, because like when they first came out for me in the 80s, you know, I originally played the original cyberpunk game when it wasn't cyberpunk. It was cyberpunk, not cyberpunk 2020. And I was telling someone, I said, you know, it's weird because the game seemed very dark, and it was interesting because it almost seemed probable in a way. Just the, mm-hmm. not necessarily the cyber tech portion of it, but, you know, I guess almost like the hopeless feeling of it.
Sure.
And the funny thing is now, it's like trying to play cyberpunk now, it's like, you just don't get that hopeless feeling anymore. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, we might be hopeless, but it doesn't seem as, it's almost like the future seems bleak, but in a completely different way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost, to me, it's almost like it says it doesn't make a lot of sense. And I was talking about in the article, and it's like, you know, I couldn't really put a finger on it. And he wrote us back and says, I enjoyed reading your cyberpunk article. I think that part of the problem of why this environment feels off is we're literally living in the future. It's, you know, and I thought that was kind of interesting, is that that's kind of true, because a lot of the technology, I mean, it's almost kind of what happened with watching the original Star Trek series. Yes, it was a little campy, but it's just like we look at it and go like, well, why are their communicators so big, for example?
Yeah.
You know, why, you know, how come we, you know, how come they don't have really tiny this or that or the other thing?
Mm-hmm.
Never mind the fact that it was made in the 60s where, you know, computers took up rooms, you know, and, you know, the fact that they had those little plastic discs, and it's, you know, not even discs, little plastic things that they used for, like, you know, storage of texts and stuff. And it's just like, really? Wow. That was cool back then. It's like, you know, we have that, but in a completely different way. So... But yeah, it's interesting, because it's like, I don't know, you know, like I said, it's like I've always, you know, and it's interesting because I remember there is a, I saw the ad for, I guess, the Cyberpunk 2077 video game.
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys seen that by any chance?
I don't think I have.
And it's interesting because it actually is based off of the old Cyberpunk game, because some of the visual elements they used in the ad are characters or artwork that's taken out of the original game, which is very, you know, so that was kind of weird. Of course, it's 57 years after what we originally were going to put label as the cyberpunk era.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that interesting, but still it's like, you know, to me, the cyberpunk was really all about, to me, it's not really about the tech at all. And I don't know if you guys, you know, and I guess this is why I never really liked Shadowrun. You know, people say, oh, well, it's fantasy cyberpunk. I said, but to me, cyberpunk was always supposed to be, I'm not going to say depressing, but it was kind of supposed to be like hopeless and depressing, kind of in a way, as a society.
Don't be gritty, that's for sure.
That gritty, I guess that's a better word. And I just, to me, Shadowrun never, you know, with the fantasy elements in there, it's like it wasn't really gritty enough for me. And it's like that's why I've never liked Shadowrun. Although, you know, I know a lot of people that just love it to death. I don't know. Have you guys ever played Shadowrun?
Oh, I have, yeah.
Have you ever?
No, I haven't played Shadowrun. I know about it.
I mean, so George, you play Shadowrun. Have you ever played Cyberpunk?
Is it who made the Cyberpunk game?
God. R. Sal Torriason, or I can't even pronounce his name either.
Oh, the Talosaur, whatever. No, I haven't played that. I think I had an Iron Crown Enterprises Cyberpunk game.
Yes, I forget what that was called. That was actually based off the old Space Master rules.
Right, exactly. I've got that somewhere, and I played that a few times way back when. And I don't know how I feel about it necessarily either, because at the time I thought it was cool, and it seemed both possible and futuristic. But I don't know, I guess, but it's true. Part of the whole setting was just kind of, it was bleak and, you know, everything is a crime syndicate, right? And, or a mega corporation.
Well, basically everyone was into something illegal, be it the politicians, be it the crime, you know, the gangs, be it the corporations, you know, the corporations basically ran the government is the assumption, you know?
Yeah.
That kind
but
of thing.
That, you know, I don't know. I don't think it necessarily... that we grew the right way. You know, I mean, it's a weird thing. Like when you're talking about a Bluetooth, you know, ear thing, that seems like it's totally dead on with the way cyberpunk was being predicted back then. But the fact that we're not all living on a concrete slab and, you know, everything is done on a chip. Never mind. I got nothing to say.
Yeah, I don't know. I
talked myself into a corner.
Like I said, it's interesting because... For certain things, the future looks bleak in a completely different way.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But yeah, I don't know. But what's interesting is he did have one follow-on question, which I'm not going to cover here, but we should probably do in a show at some point. The only reason I wasn't going to cover it is because I couldn't think of anything. He said, which RPG environment that was theoretically plausible but later to determine not to be, is your favorite? The way that was worded was strange. But basically, he's asking, you know, was there a game that seemed plausible, but then when it was, even though later on it wasn't determined to be plausible, is still a favorite environment?
I don't, what is it that's not plausible? I have a hard time with not plausible these days. You know what I mean?
Well, that's
can you give me an example of something that you played in one of those games that you don't believe is plausible anymore, even if you don't think it's the best? What's an example?
Yeah, you know, that's actually an interesting question. Well, let's face it, almost any fantasy game falls under that. But if you're talking science fiction...
Your Morrow Project game. What is that one called?
Oh, well, that's very true. The Morrow Project probably, you know, when it was written, we were thinking, okay. Because obviously none of us have invented really plausible, you know, cryogenics.
We haven't invented it yet, but that doesn't mean it's not plausible.
Right.
You don't think cryogenics is plausible?
The science really doesn't support it.
Yeah, I mean, I have a hard time with this concept of not plausible. I think there's very little that I think is not plausible. I think implementation, I think there's been some really wonky ideas on implementation because we didn't know enough about the science at the time. For example, I don't think anyone will be hulking out due to gamma rays anytime soon.
Yeah, I try.
I'm not going to.
Well, I mean that
rule out, you know, some kind of like human mutation that is positive due to, you know, radiation science.
Well, I would say that Gamma World falls under the area of, you know. First off, it was never theoretically plausible.
Well, Gamma World was never plausible. You know, Warthog right. Men on Warthog bicycles probably is not going to happen.
You know, four arms, four legs. Yeah, no. No, it's, so, I mean, I guess in terms of a scientific con, you know, you know, context? I mean, that's where you'd have to ask this question. Is, I mean, so, yeah, I don't know. I mean,
you know, I think I'm having a weird response to the cyberpunk thing because I know that, you know, when I was 18 and I really thought industrial music was awesome, it fit my personality. Now that I'm, you know, much closer to death, I'm less likely to listen to Nine Inch Nails on a Thursday. And cyberpunk, well, it just doesn't fascinate me, you know, the same way. I even, you know, every now and then I'll be flipping channels and I'll see some of those movies like, you know, that were trying to, like that Johnny Mnemonic movie that was based on the William Gibson story.
Oh my God, that was horrible.
You know, and aside from Blade Runner, there weren't that many sort of cyberpunky kinds of movies that hit well. Because, you know, I'm not sure it can really play out in some senses. It can be fun, sure. I mean, most games are fun, but it just doesn't quite land right anymore. I guess you just have to come up with a new gritty and a new future that's more interesting. And if I'm going to do that, I might as well just go all the way out into space, I think. Or maybe the new cyberpunk in my mind is more like the transhumanity stuff, like Eclipse Phase.
Someone in the blog mentioned that's really kind of what sort of happened.
Yeah.
Is, well, that is a separate thing upon itself, but that seems to be kind of, you know, the new version or the latest flavor of cyberpunk in a way.
Right. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And that, by the way, that Eclipse Phase game is fabulous. It's awesome. And the books are beautiful.
The books are beautiful. I haven't had the chance to play it yet, but I can attest to how gorgeous the stuff is, that's for sure.
Alrighty, well, I think for sake of our audience, we're going to, you know, kind of finish it up here. We have any closing comments for anything? Besides, thank you for listening.
No, I think we're okay, yeah.
We are, yeah.
Yeah. Well, the good news is, as you see, we actually do things based off of listener feedback. Two of the things we talked about were from, you know, Facebook and from an email that someone sent us. So yeah,
I love it when you guys give us topics. It makes things easier.
Awesome. Yeah,
absolutely. Because even if I don't know anything, I'll fake it.
Oh, yeah.
So if you want to do that, send us the topic, send us your thoughts. You can email us at info@rpgcircus.com. You can call and leave us a voicemail at 1-888-643-6322. You can go to our RPG Circus Facebook page and post something to the wall. And, of course, you can go to our RPG Circus homepage and use the SpeakPipe application there to record an audio comment and send it to us. We'll be more than happy to take any of those. So thank you for listening. And anything else before I close it up? I know I already asked that, but I want to make sure.
No, we're good.
All right.
Yeah, we're fine.
Well, I'm very happy to wrap up the Season 5, Episode 4 for you guys, and we will see you again in 2 weeks. RPG Circus is released on a Creative Commons Attribution US License 3.0. For more information, please visit creativecommons.org.